Les séminaires du Collège de France.
J'ai le grand plaisir de vous présenter le professeur Guglielmo Cinque, professeur émérite à l'Université de Venise, l'une des figures fondamentales de la syntaxe comparative, de la théorie syntaxique. Il a donné tellement de contributions importantes, je ne peux pas vraiment les dénombrer et les mentionner toutes. À commencer au moins du livre de 1990 sur les dépendances à barre, et puis le texte que j'ai cité, qui est vraiment un texte fondateur des études cartographiques, son livre sur les adverbes, les positions verbales et les structures fonctionnelles de la phrase. En 1999, j'ai toujours tendance à penser les nombres en Suisse, en français, en franco-suisse. Donc 99 me vient immédiatement à l'esprit, mais il faut dire 99. Et puis ses contributions plus récentes, sa monographie récente sur les phrases relatives et son livre, sa monographie encore plus récente sur l'ordre de mots dont il sera question aujourd'hui. Donc, merci beaucoup d'être venu nous rendre visite et bienvenue à Paris. Merci.
Merci à toi. Je parlerai en anglais. OK. My talk has two parts. In the first part, I will sketch the basics or the basic facts and generalization concerning linear order, word order, then at least through the variety, the bewildering variety that one finds across languages. Then I will consider certain partial regularities in word order, and also, even more importantly, the systematic non-existence of certain orders, which are very telling about a theory of word order. In the second part, I will attempt to build an account of the facts and generalization that we saw earlier, we'll be seeing later, and I will go through first one argument that what is at the basis of word order is movement, although of a different type, of the type that Rizzi has been discussing before, which has an interpretive effect, whether informational, like topic focus, or logical, like interrogative movement in WH. And after arguing empirically for the principle that movement is at the basis of cross-linguistic word order, I will propose or suggest one particular restriction on the type of movements that are allowed in the theory, and which should go one step towards a restrictive theory of word order, one that can derive the attested and attestable orders without deriving orders that are not attested and arguably are non-attestable. And then I'll summarize and finish with pure speculation on Now, one of the first things that strikes one about word order across languages is the extreme variety, the extreme difference that are actually found. When I refer to word order, I refer to neutral or canonical word order as different from the type of word orders that Luigi has been talking about, namely movements that are required for informational reasons like topic focus or logical reasons like WH movement in interrogatives or in relatives, and which require some specific contextual requirement to be acceptable. The type of word order that I will be concerned with has no meaning effect. So the difference in word order between, let's say, Italian and French and Japanese has no impact on how you understand the same sentence, although the word order is completely different. And one example that I gave here with respect to the distinction between the canonical or neutral and the special order that you find to highlight some particular element is given by languages like Bangla or Chinese, which have in their nominal modifiers the order as the unmarked or the canonical order, demonstrative, numeral, adjective, and noun, but can have the adjective preceding the demonstrative even, if one wants in those languages highlight or contrast the adjective. Now, as an example of the type of variety that one finds, let me give in advance some variation which will be taken up later, again concerning nominal modifiers. So, for example, in Bulgarian, these elements are found, like in English actually, in the order demonstrative, numeral, adjective, and noun, but in a Niger-Congo language like Mbun, you have the mirror image in which you actually literally have beer big two these, to say these two big beers. In the Papuan language Abu Arapesh, you have the order noun, demonstrative, numeral, adjective, where you have the same relative order of demonstrative, numeral, and adjective, but following the noun rather than preceding it as in Bulgarian. And then you have like a case like in Burmese, where you have the demonstrative which precedes the noun, the adjective that follows, and the numeral that follows the adjective. Or in Maasai, you have again the demonstrative that precedes the noun, but the numeral and adjective in the opposite order follow the noun, opposite with respect to Burmese. Now, word order in the clause is even more dramatic, I mean the variation, given that there are many more elements that make up the clause: nominals, auxiliaries, modals, prepositional phrases, adverbs, and so on. So I cite here just a couple of cases. The first one is a difference between English and Japanese, where, for example, in English, which is a subject-verb-object language, the finite complement clause follows the main verb. The subordinator that introduces the clause is actually initial, that, and then the modal precedes the main verb, can do, and the object and the manner adverb follow the verb. In Japanese, you find an almost mirror image, because now the main verb is at the very end. The subordinator, which introduces the finite complement clause, is at the end rather than at the beginning of the clause. Then the modal actually follows rather than precedes the verb or the embedded clause, and then you have the object and the manner adverb that also precede. Another case is again given by the contrast between Italian and Malagasy. Italian is again SVO, verb medial, whereas Malagasy is verb initial, where the subject is actually at the end, as opposed to Italian, where it's at the beginning. But here, interestingly, we saw another case of a mirror image in the order of the of adverbs, aspectual adverbs, like no longer, always, well, which in Italian have the order that you find in English, pre-verbally, typically, except for well. and which are the opposite in Malagasy, as has been studied by a number of people. Now, as I said earlier, these different word orders do not affect interpretation. This is crucial. And the question now is, are there principled limits on the variation that we confront? And to begin, we can observe, as I said, the existence of partial regularities, and even more importantly, the non-existence of certain orders. Both of these points have been pointed out by Joseph Greenberg, a picture of whom you find here. He is actually the initiator of modern linguistic typology, and his work has been followed by many people, most prominently by Dreyer, but also by Holberg, Roberts, Biberau, and Sheehan, and many, many others. Now, there are, as he pointed out, and I phrase it now in Dreyer's terms rather than in his original ones, there are certain correlations that are non-accidental between word order pairs, which happen to be much stronger within the same domain and less stronger across domains, but still are present even across domains. So within the same domain, say the clause, there is a correlation between the position of the verb, the main verb, with respect to the object and adjuncts or adverbials, and the position of an auxiliary with respect to the main verb. So the verb is final, and there are many more genera and languages which also have the auxiliary final, as the verb is final with respect to its arguments. Now, genera followed Dreyer's methodology. It's more important to count genera rather than languages, in the sense that genera are roughly families of the depth of Romance and Slavic languages in the Indo-European macro family. And I said, Dreyer's point is important because number of languages, which is still important to record, could be biased by simply by the descriptions that are available to people. So it's important to see to what genera they belong and see how many more genera there are that represent a certain type of order. And as you see from in 8, there are many more genera and many more languages, of course, in the correlation between the finality of the verb and the auxiliary, or the initiality of the verb and the auxiliary, as opposed to mixed cases where they go opposite ways, so to speak. And the same is true with V and modal, as opposed to the auxiliary. Now, it's weaker, as I said, across different domains, here the verbal and nominal domain, because, again, taking it from Dreyer's work, if you take the verbal head finality of OV and the nominal head finality of with the noun, genitive noun, you have more genera, but still the mixed cases in 10 C and D, and the same is in 11 C and D, are very numerous. So it looks as if the correlations that we saw to be quite strong within the same domain, here are weaker in that there are many different possibilities. There are even very striking inconsistencies. For example, in the Papuan language Bargam, which is head final in the sentence with the verb coming finally, but it's head initial in the noun phrase. So it goes completely in a dissociated manner. And in Tzu-Tzu-Jil, again, in the opposite way, it's head initial in the sentence, but it's head final in the nominal phrase. Now, rigid or consistent head final and head initial languages like Japanese and Malagasy, these are the most rigid ones, are actually a minority. This is also a puzzle that still requires understanding. And they are never totally consistent. Even Japanese, which is one of the most rigid, has some inconsistencies, and the same with Malagasy. And to be provocative, maybe each language differs from every other language in word order type. So this is a challenge that the theory of word order has to come up with. Now, the third case that I was alluding to is the non-existence of certain orders. Again, this is one of Greenberg's finding, and looking at the order, relative order of degree adverb, adjective, and noun, he had noticed that out of the six mathematical combination of these three elements, only three for him are attested. Actually, even the fourth case is attested. So he had already noticed 14a, that's an English case, very tall man, and b, noun, adjective, degree, like literally shirt, white, very, and also noun, degree, adverb, that's Italian, un uomo molto, a man, very tall. He had not, in his sample, there were no language with the order adjective, degree, adverb, noun, but actually there are. Very few, very rare, something that we will keep seeing in all cases. There is a pattern that is absolutely widespread and totally consistent. What you don't find is 14e and f. These two cases are actually never attested. And the same is true for another triple, numeral classifier, which is a morpheme that in some languages numerals require to count. There is the possibility to argue that even languages that don't have apparently an overt classifier, they do have at least few, one or two, even Italian or English, but I will not go into that. And here again, but this time he had his sample gave the four out of six possibilities that you see in 15. So you have the order numeral classifier noun, that's Chinese, or noun classifier numeral, that's one Austronesian language, that's Dili, or C, noun numeral classifier, that's one Tai Kadai language. And the most rare, actually, I only could find one case, this Austronesian language, Ronga, classifier preceding numeral noun. What you don't find are the orders in 15e and f. Once again, this is the same pattern that we saw earlier with degree adverb, adjective, and noun. And we'll see other cases. Now, the task of a theory of word order, I was saying, is to derive the possible, namely the attested, what we actually see in real cases, or more theoretically, attestable, namely the claim that something could be a possible order in some language, whereas something else could not possibly be an order in any language. And this without deriving, as I said, the unattested, unattestable ones. And I just remember some scientists claiming at some point that the value of a theory, I can't recall who it was, is not a theory, is not how much it allows, but how much it excludes without excluding what is actually found. So, in the first step in developing this restrictive theory, I will try to give the argument that movement is at the basis of this type of word order, the non the meaningless type of word order that you find across languages. Now, it's a well-known fact that has been studied even from the 60s by psycholinguists, that there seems to be a particular cognitive semantic hierarchy holding of the order of different classes of adjectives. And the rough idea is that more absolute, objective, or inherent properties occur closer to the noun than more subjective kind of properties. So if you take, let's say, an adjective of color, one of size, and one of value, it seems that color is more objective. I mean, recognition of the color is more objective than recognition of size, which might depend on the person who judges it, and even more objective, more obviously, of an adjective of value, which, I mean, by definition, is something that is very subjective. Now, I I abstract away from question, how is it possible to establish the precise degree of objectivity or subjectivity of a certain class of adjectives? And what principles or principle it should be made to follow, right? Because these are irrelevant for my argumentation. What counts here is that there is such a hierarchy, whatever the ultimate explanation for that hierarchy is. Now, what we see now is that actually, in English at least, one could say in the unmarked case, but one can show it's not unmarked, it's actually rigid if you do some manipulations. So the order is value, size, color, noun. A beautiful big red ball. In Indonesian, you find the same relative order, but on the opposite side of the noun, in a mirror image. But once again, color is closer to the noun than value, and size and value. And these orders are, with that respect, we could say the principle of relative distance of the distinct adjective classes from the noun, either pre or postnominally. They are by far the most frequent. I gave some here, but there are many more languages, of course. And even the mirror image of the English type, or of head, final type, it's namely noun, color, size, value, is the most frequent. That's typical of that kind of. Nonetheless, as pointed out by an eminent typologist, not a generativist, there are a few languages which seem to contradict the principle of relative distance of adjectives from the noun. Because in a language like Maltese, but there is another qua language which has exactly the same order of adjectives. Now, the adjective of color is the most distant from the noun, and value, which should be the most distant, is the closer to the noun. And he pointed out that pre-nominally, the order in which color is more distant from the noun than the others is never found. This is again one of the very pervasive left-right asymmetry that one finds, but I leave it to the side. And more importantly, what as a typologist he suggested is that if we want to retain the cognitive semantic principle of relative distance of the different classes of adjectives with respect to the noun, we have to make an abstract conjecture, namely that we start out with a structure or a hierarchy that respects the principle. And then we move out the noun to the front, disrupting, apparently, this cognitive hierarchy. And he says, in his words, it is only on such an abstract analysis that the iconic explanation of the relative distance of semantic classes of adjectives or nouns can be upheld. Very important observation. Now, of course, this movement has to be restrained, because if you allow it to apply freely, then you get orders that are never found. Like what we just saw in 19, it could be derived by moving, for example, by having, you know, starting out from the structure that we saw earlier with the value, size, color, noun, by moving color out and then size out, and then obtain what is never found. So that cannot be the case that the movement is unconstrained. And there are other cases like size, color, value, noun, or value, color, size, noun, which are also not found again. Now, the restriction on movement that appears to discriminate between the possible, attested, and the impossible, unattested, orders is that only the head of the constituent, the engine of the movement, let's say, here the noun, can move along the hierarchy, along a hierarchy that respects the relative distance from the noun, as in 21. So, adjective color is merged. Maybe this is just the hierarchy, not ordered. Closer to the noun, then size, and then value. And here, as I said, one cannot have movement. If we could move something without moving the noun with it, then we could get some order like color, value, size, noun, which is never fine. Now, if only the head of the nominal constituent, the noun, can move, what are the possible ways in which it can move? And if we look at a well-known case of WH movement, of a movement which is very well studied, and we see that the engine here, in the case of WH movement, the WH category, can move in three possible ways, and actually some combination of these three. By itself, as in 22A, you have Island, who you have certainly seen pictures of, you just move the WH category, or you move a larger category containing the engine of the movement, the WH, with material that circumvents, or let's say is higher up than WH, as in 22B, Island, pictures of whom you have certainly seen, or you can move the a larger phrase containing the WH with material which is lower than the WH itself, 22C, Island, whose pictures you have certainly seen. Now, these movements, 22B and C, are called pied pipings. They recall the Pied Piper of Hamelin, but it's another one of the picturesque terminology of the generative linguistics time, the generative semantics time. Now, if the engine of the movement in the case of a nominal domain is the noun, so the noun itself can move in exactly the same ways and no other way. And so, for example, if it moves just by itself along the hierarchy, you get, you know, the noun first moves above the first modifier, then it moves along just by itself again, across the next one up, and up to the very top. One gets the order of Maltese that Franz Planck had actually suggested. But if it moves in one of the other two ways, namely by the pictures of whom pied piping, now, it takes the first modifier up and moves it to the intermediate step, without altering the relative order of the modifier with respect to the noun. It's like the pictures of whom. Whom is the noun here, and it drags along pictures, so to speak. So it drags along the adjective of color. And then it continues by the same mode of piping, dragging along the next modifier up to the next intermediate step, and then again to the very end, applying exactly the same procedure at every step. And then now what we get is the order value, size, color, noun, because the noun never crossed above the modifiers in dragging them in the pictures of whom piping. If we have the movement by the other type of piping, namely the whose picture piping, now what happens is that the noun moves dragging along lower material. In the first step there is no lower material. So it just moves above the adjective of color, but once it's in the intermediate step and moves with the same piping type, then it has to drag along now the adjective of color. So you have the order noun color, which is moved across the adjective of size, reversing the order of noun, color, and size now, and then to the very end with the value, giving the order that we saw, which is the mirror image of the Bangla order, noun, color, size, value. So it's the... Now, the picture is actually, as usual, more complex in interesting ways. And in ways that do not affect what I've just sketched. So while pre-nominally there is only one possible order, post-nominally there are more than the two orders that we have just seen. So in addition to noun, color, size, value, which involved three application of the same piping of the whose pictures type, and noun, value, size, color, which involved movement of the noun by itself, so manipulating on the principle of relative distance of the adjectives from the noun. We also have other orders that can only be derived by movement. There is no way in which one could get those orders unless you moved something, in this case the noun again, dragging along some adjective and subverting some of the orders. For example, you find in the Austronesian language Tatana, apparently this is very rigid order, noun, size, color, and value. Again, here, the adjective of color is not the closest to the noun. And the size color, the size adjective is the closest. There are other languages that show that order, also Welsh, for example. Now here, one of the ways that, in fact, the only way one can obtain that order is by moving the noun first across the lower modifier, color, then moving again alone, as we saw, above size, but once it arrives at the second intermediate step, it then switches onto the whose picture type piping, taking the sequence noun, size, color on top of value, so that now what you find is noun, size, color, and value at the end. Another case, again, which can only be derived by movement, is in the Papuan language Selepet, which has noun color, value size. And here, there is another language that shows the same order. You have the noun that crosses the lowest of the modifiers, the adjective of color, but then this moves by itself now, forgetting about the pipings. This is always a possibility, switching from one type of movement to another. And all the combination, if you, it's an exercise one can do, is to see whether any of the impossible orders are derived, or if only the attested orders are actually derived. Now this approach toward order variation could look like very artificial, very technical, partly unmotivated. But there are a number of considerations that I think really support it. First, it allows to derive all the attested orders. This actually has been done, not with the adjectives. We don't have enough facts about the adjectives, but I've done it with respect to the demonstrative, numeral, adjective, and noun order that we'll see in a while. So it allows to derive all the attested orders from one and the same hierarchy. Because if you could renounce to that, you could say there is no way in which languages can be derived from one the same structure. But it seems to me that if you manage to reconcile all types of differences starting from the same structure, then that's a bonus of the theory which is constructed. Now, so it allows to derive all the attested orders from one and the same hierarchy that respects the iconic principle of relative distance of the modifiers from the head. Second, with the important restriction that I mentioned, namely that only the head of a projection of a domain, like an NP, AP, PP, etc., only the head can move within that projection. And nothing else, then this allows the discrimination of possible and impossible orders. The third potential element in favor is that the movement options that are involved here are independently motivated. We saw that they exist in WH movement, and we have no recourse to special movements. We simply apply the only ones that we see are allowed in other domains of the language, of universal grammar. And fourth, the movement approach naturally carries over to different syntactic domains that display the same pattern of possible and impossible orders. Now, one order to the left, that's the main distinction, and selective multiple orders to the right of a head. And other domains displaying exactly this pattern of one order to the left and at least two orders, because we don't have enough information of more orders, except for one case that I will come to, is the order of adverbs. So what one finds is that with the same adverbs that we saw earlier, with no longer the terminative, the universal, and the completive aspect adverbs, you find that order in English or Chinese. In 28C, you have the same order, for example, in Italian or main clause German. In Malagasy and Yuan, these two Austronesian languages, you have the mirror image with completely, again, being closer to the verb, which is initial. And the same pattern you find with the order of circumstantial PPs that have been studied from a cross-linguistic perspective by actually a French linguist, Boisson, and also by two Chinese linguists, as well as with other people having contributed. Namely, the order of time, prepositional phrase, place, and manner before the verb. And after the verb, you have either the same time, place, manner, or the mirror image. What you don't find is 29b, as we don't find the 28b. The order pre-verbally, in this case, are never found. So once again, this becomes natural if you think of it. If the different the fact that there are more orders to the right of a head is a function or a consequence of the way the head moves. So before the head, you only have one order, which actually gives you the glimpse of what the or the base order is, what is the, or in fact, the base hierarchy that is later linearizing that particular order. And why do we get more order to the right? Well, that's a function. We know that if something moves, it can move in different ways, and so you get this left-right asymmetry in a very simple way. Now, in the order of nominal modifiers, we see exactly the same pattern. In 30 A, B, C, and D, you actually see the possible impossible orders. To the left of the noun, you only have one order, demonstrative nominal adjective. To the right of the noun, you have at least these two orders. In fact, you have many more. And then there are cases where some elements precede and some elements follow. And then again, one has to calculate what the possibilities and what are the attested ones. Now, this case is even more telling because we have exhaustive evidence of all the possible and impossible combination of these four elements over a sample of over 2,000 languages. Now, in note 7, I mentioned the fact that Dreyer has claimed that there are at least a few languages, like five, which seem to contradict or to say that there are languages that have orders that are excluded in my analysis, but it can be shown that they are not the only orders in those languages, so they're not real counterexamples to the overwhelming number of languages that are compatible with the 14 orders possible, seems quite convincing to me. Now, out of the 24 mathematically possible orders, factorial 4, only 14 are actually attested. These are given in 31, again with languages and genera. You see that the most popular is the mirror image of the Bulgarian English type, where you have noun, adjective, numeral, demonstrative, especially if you look at genera, which are more, many more. Now, the bold-faced orders in 31 A, B, and L are derived in exactly the same way that we saw with the three orders, value, size, color, noun, noun, color, size, value, or noun, value, size, color. That's exactly the same way in which they can. The remaining 11 orders of the attested 14, those that are not in boldface in 31, are derivable via different combinations of the three possible movement options that we saw. And this I leave as an exercise. Now, the 10 orders which are unattested, namely those in 32, are underivable under the conditions that I spelled out, namely variation in word order is given by movement, but what can move is just the head of the projection of the domain, namely here the noun, for example, in one of the possible ways in which the noun can move, namely by itself or via one of the two piping modes. In fact, the two piping modes can be combined with each other. I didn't mention the sentence in English in which they are combined in the WH when you say island, pictures of whose body have disturbed everyone. You have pictures of whose body, you have both a pictures of whom and whose picture combined together. And this is exactly what you need to derive some of the 14 orders of demonstrative, numeral, and adjective. But What is crucial is that the orders in 32 are not derivable by movement of the noun. Now, the restriction that only the head of a projection can move within its projection can account for the two missing orders of degree, adverb, adjective, and noun, numeral classifier, noun that we saw earlier. Under the plausible assumption, which in the case of degree, adverb, adjective, and noun is almost obvious, in which degree, adverb, and adjective form a projection. It's an AP where there is a degree, adverb, and the adjective. And in the case of the classifier, following again Greenberg, there is a classifier phrase whose head is the classifier and the numeral is the modifier of that head. In this case, you see in 14AB, the two heads move in unison in the same way within their own projection, namely by the pictures of hornpipe piping, which does not alter the relative order between the modifier and the head, because each head drags along the modifier without crossing over it. In 14b, we see that, again, the two heads moved in unison, the same type of movement, because the head now moves by the whose picture pipe piping, crossing over its modifier. So the adjective crosses over the degree adverb, and the noun crosses over the AP containing adjective and degree adverb. And then you get the two mismatches, namely 14C and D, in which the two heads move in different ways. And the adjective moves with the pictures of whom without crossing over the degree adverb, but now the noun crosses over. And the last one, which is actually the rarest, which recall that was not in Greenberg's sample, is where the adjective in the inner domain moves with the whose picture pipe piping crossing over its modifier, whereas the noun seems to remain in situ because it moves with the pictures of whom pipe piping, dragging along its modifier without inverting with it. And exactly the same is true, the same pattern and the same account for the numeral classifier noun. Now, 14E and F and 15E and F cannot be derived because the noun would have to get out of its own projection and penetrate within the inner projection of made out of the degree adverb and adjective. That's not possible. You cannot have an external head getting into an internal domain. Now, a movement approach to word order also, I think, promises to shed light on the numerosity of certain orders and rarity on other orders that Luigi had mentioned earlier as one of the goals that one should have in mind as well. Now, recall that the three modes in which the noun could move by itself, or whose pictures or pictures of whom pipe piping, we have independent evidence that the pictures of whom pipe piping is more marked than the whose pictures pipe piping. And we can see that if we look at English WH movement, because in matrix WH questions, for example, 36A, whose pictures did you keep in your wallet? You get a perfect normal sentence. But if you move with the pictures of whom pipe piping, you get a sentence which some people admit to a certain extent, other people like Svenonius find completely impossible. And certainly this is clearer in the case of embedded WH movement, where there is a clear contrast between whose pictures pipe piping, possible, 37A, and the impossible pictures of whom pipe piping, which cannot be in an embedded WH interrogative phrase. And 38 give it the same contrast with the restrictive relatives, non-restrictives are to be kept aside for dependent reasons. So this may be, suppose that we take this into consideration for our theory of world order, which involves movement, and say that all kinds of movement that give you different world orders have to respect this kind of markedness of one type of pipe piping as opposed to the unmarkedness of the other type of pipe piping. Then we have a way, in a sense, to account for the numerosity of orders which are derived by consistently, for example, by a Hus picture pipe piping, which should in principle be more numerous than orders which are derived still in a consistent way with the other type of pipe piping, which is more marked. And this we see actually in the case we saw earlier here. Now, 13.1a is derived by applying the Hus picture pipe piping of the noun that goes up and reverses all of the modifiers by the Hus picture pipe piping, as opposed to 31b, which again does not mix any the three types of movement, just utilizes the same type of movement, the pictures of Hus pipe piping, but yet you see it's rarer in terms of languages and especially and also in terms of genera. The case of the other by itself, it has to be understood why it's so marked. Now, this, as I said, is plausibly at the basis of the fact that also the change, let me see if I... also the change from a more marked to a less marked pipe piping should be preferable to a change or a shift in deriving some orders from a less marked Hus pictures pipe piping to a more marked pictures of Hus pipe piping. And this seems to be what we find. So if you look at one of the cases that we saw above, namely the order of noun, adjective, and degree adverb, here 33a both move in the same way, Hus picture pipe piping. So each one crosses over its modifier. First the inner one, the within the AP, and then the noun crosses over its modifier, the adjective phrase, in the outer domain. In 33b, you have the two moving in the same way. They should be slightly less popular as orders. But now let's consider the other two cases that are dissociated in terms of types of movement. So in the case of 33c, we have in the inner domain movement of the more marked case, pictures of Hus pipe piping, by which the adjective does not cross over its modifier, whereas in the outer domain we have movement of the noun with the other types of pipe piping that crosses over its modifier. In 33D, which is the rarest case, we find the other type of shift. Now here we have a shift from the less marked type of movement. The adjective crosses over its modifier, degree adverb, but the noun doesn't cross over. So it moves with the pictures of Hus, which seems to penalize the type of. And the same is true for the other triple that we saw earlier, where the least frequent case is 34D, exactly the same pattern with the... Now, this pattern is so widespread that it can shed light on the exceptions to two fundamental restrictions that have been found apparently in recent times, namely the so-called final over final condition that Holmberg and Sheehan, Bimperauer, Roberts and Holmberg had proposed, and the head final filter. I'll come back briefly to those, to both. Now, the exceptions to the final or a final condition, which disallows, apparently, structures where a head initial phrase is containing a head final phrase, like in 35D or in 36D, where you have VO, head initial, but within a phrase that has a head in the final position. Whereas the other cases are allowed by the final or a final condition, it only ruled out the fourth case. But the fourth case is actually not impossible. You find in a number of languages, even in Dreyer's 92 case, there were four genera that he gave. One should now look at those cases, but I found at least these two languages, and there are more in the Kokama-Kokamila language, where an actual auxiliary follows a VO type of VP. And the same is true for the VO comp type that even Dreyer gave, as he says, the sole instance in my database of a VO language with final complementizer is this Tibeto-Burman language. There is also another language apparently given by Guldemann. It's a Khoisan language, again with the SVO structure, but final complementizer. These are very rare. These are extremely rare in numerosity. And the idea would be that it's exactly the same pattern that we saw up to now. So wherever you have either the same way of pipe-piping, fine. Whether it's whose pictures or pictures of whom, it gives you good results. Now you can combine in a dissociated way the two, but only one of them is more frequent than the other. Namely the one which has a shift from a more marked inner case to a less marked one. Whereas if you do the opposite, you combine a non-marked or less marked inner within a larger phrase where you have the less marked type of piping, then the number of languages that are found with that order are very few. I mean, in all of these patterns, it's the same. Now, the head final filter, once again, it's the same kind of pattern. Now, this filter was originally given by Williams in 82 to rule out what in English is actually impossible, namely a proud of his children man, where you have a pre-nominal adjective that is followed by a complement here. And this, he claimed, could be derived from the restriction that the two heads had to be, the head of the modifier had to be final. In fact, you see that that's the case in Dutch 37b, where you have the proud, the head of the adjectival phrase, being final within the adjectival phrase next to the noun phrase, which is also final. In English, you have something which is allowed by the head final filter, and actually it's possible in many languages. You have then, again, the two, now, in these cases, once again, you see the same pipe-piping movements. So in 37A, the two heads move in the same way and move with the whose pictured pipe-piping, because they cross over their respective, in this case, complement rather than modifier, and the man crosses over its modifier. In 37B, again, they move in the same way. with the pictures of windpipe piping, which does not alter their relative order. So the adjective follows the complement, and the noun follows the modifier. Then in C and D, you have actually a mismatch of the two movements, because in C, you see that the adjective, this is from Persian, in the inner projection, has moved with the pictures of whom, the more marked one, but in the outer domain, you have the noun moving with the who's pictured by piping, which is the less marked case, and that's fine. And this is also apparently an order that you find quite extensively in languages. What you don't find so extensively is the last order, the one which in English is impossible. But it's possible in 37D, literally it's proud with his child father. This is possible in Greek, modern Greek also, in Russian, in a few other languages, but it's rare. And once again, the account for that rarity, could be the fact that here the switch from one inner domain to the next higher domain is that you moved by, you raised from one domain to the other by applying the less marked type of pipe piping. In D, the adjective crosses over its complement, but the noun moves with the more marked type of pipe piping. So it's going from less marked to more marked, and this is gives you a penalty. So that's the idea that now to conclude, to go towards the conclusion, let me give you an idea of how we can build a restrictive theory of word order by this crucial restriction of what can move, namely the head of each projection, and in what ways it can move, in one of the three ways that we saw. If there were no restrictions, just consider what the addition of a fifth element, in addition to numeral classifier, in addition to demonstrative, numeral, adjective, and noun, what we saw earlier, the addition of a fifth element, that of a numeral classifier, that we also saw, which gives you factorial 5, namely 120 different possibilities. Now, if, however, only 14 orders are actually possible and attested of the demonstrative, numeral, adjective, and noun, and if the classifier makes a constituent with a numeral, the numeral classifier makes a constituent with the, then it can move only within this constituent, then we expect to find not 120 possible combinations, if there were no restrictions, but only 28, namely the 14 orders multiplied by 2, because you can either have the numeral classifier preceding or following the numeral. And this is exactly what we see, except that I haven't found yet 2 of the 28 orders possible, which are given in 38 now. Now, each pair gives you exactly what I was saying, namely, if numeral and classifier form a constituent, and if the head of that constituent, in Greenberg's terms, the classifier, can only move within that constituent, then it can either follow or precede the numeral. Cannot be found after the noun, because it would move out of its constituent. And so you actually see the kind of languages that instantiate the two possibilities for each of the of the two order, for each of the two orders of classifier and numeral. The 38e prime, e adjective noun, demonstrative classifier numeral, I have been able to find, and also the 38o that you see there. For all the others, they are attested as possible orders, and no other strange order is possible, with the classifier being found after the demonstrative or the numeral in the not case. Now, the addition of another element by taking the numeral to be a complex phrase, like 300, where you have a multiplier, 3, and the base, 100, which is the head of the construction, again studied by Greenberg and then recently also by Kane, this would yield 720 possible combinations because it's factorial 6. But yet, if the multiplier and base form a constituent, we don't expect to find 720 orders possible, but only 56, namely the 28 orders that we saw earlier, multiplied by 2, namely by the 2 possible positions of the base with respect of the multiplier. I haven't documented that, but it should be possible to document it with patience. And the factorial number stemming from the combination of n elements with which when you reach 10, you would have 3.5 million combinations. But if you, again, impose this restriction that only the head of each projection can move in one of the possible ways, then these are drastically reduced, maybe around 500 with 10 possible elements, but this remains to be done. Now, so the conclusion then is that these invisible rules of word order variation of the non of the meaningless type, non the type that Luigi had been talking about, which is the criterial type, which has an impact on other informational type of interpretations or logical types of interpretation and so on. Now, the first is that then canonical word order variation is a function of movement. This is not accepted by everybody, although it has been also argued for by Kane and other people. But crucially, it has to take the form of movement that can actually be is what movement can do, namely move by itself, the element, or in one of the piping ways. And the restriction crucial that we saw was crucial to discriminate between possible and impossible orders is that only the head of each projection can move, namely of NP, AP, VP, classifier P, numeral P, all of the projections that we know, and some which we still don't exactly know, because there is some in the literature, for example, with respect to numeral, classifier, and noun. Some people have claimed that the classifier forms a constituent with a noun, and some other people with a numeral. Now, the facts seem to favor absolutely the case where the classifier forms a constituent with a numeral, as Greenberg had originally envisaged, otherwise you would get impossible orders. And the third case, the third ingredient, so to speak, is which I've kept in the background, is Kane's linear correspondent axiom, which applies to hierarchies, for him in narrow syntax, but it could apply also at the interface. I mean, that's a possibility that has to be taken into account. So linearizing higher constituent to the left of lower ones, let me put it in this simpler way. And finally, a speculative consideration on the existence of this bewildering variety of word order among languages of the world, though, I mean, that kind of movement that display no meaning difference. Why is it the case that the same canonical order is possible in all languages? Why do we get all this variety, enormous variety? Now, Chomsky recently has suggested that movement is the unmarked way to build structure. It takes a subpart of an existing structure, see the examples here, and enlarges it, expands the same structure. So, the of which, that is a complement of chapter, this is moved up to the very beginning, expanding the same structure. And he claims that what he calls internal merge. And he claims that this is the unmarked way, because the other way of expanding a structure, what he calls external merge, is to take two already built structure and merge them. But then you need two already constructed elements. Here you have only one, and you do the. And he says that this kind of internal merge comes for free, in a sense, because it's the unmarked. Now, if word order is a function of movement, and if movement, this is the provocative part, comes for free, being left to apply freely to build different hierarchical structure, suppose that you let it free. But, of course, you move only in ways you can move, in one of the ways that we saw, then you are bound to build up an enormous number of different hierarchical structures that have no impact on the semantics. But there are cases where there are movements in narrow syntax which have no impact on the phonology side. So the idea, which was very plausible by Chomsky, that in narrow syntax you have only movements which have consequences in the phonology and in the semantics, given facts, simple facts like seeing John today, or anyone seeing John today in English, where clearly there is movement of a silent auxiliary to the spec of CP, which licenses the polarity item anyone. So here there is clear semantic interpretation, but no phonological interpretation of the movement. So it seems that one has to allow for the possibility that certain movements, especially not the criterial ones that we've just been talking about, which have, but then one can actually impute the meaning difference to the criterial position, which has to be interpreted, is there to be interpreted, as opposed to movements that don't target criterial positions like these, and which can have no meaning effect, so that the free movement of this kind of internal merge gives as an inevitable side effect the variation of word orders that are found. If you leave it free, as Chomsky says, it runs free, then by combining it with Keynes' axiom, then you do get any number of. But the crucial thing is how to calculate what are the possible and attested, attestable, as opposed to the impossible, unattested, unattestable. And that's the crucial goal of a theory of word order, I think. That. Okay, I'll stop here with this kind of...
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.